Well, here we are. We're now into the first week of 2020, the new year. And frankly, I was a bit of a loss on what to talk about. But, I figured that we wanted to have some type of, podcast released. So today I'm going to just kind of wax wane poetically on about the Night's Watch and Free Folk changes. So, as everyone is aware, we did the Stark Lannister neutral updates in the last month, along with the 1.5 release. And of those, we did not touch Free Folk or Night's Watch. Now, specifically, and I've said this before, so those who have heard this, bear repeating. One of the reasons for that is we wanted to focus on the initial three factions, and also because they're the ones that had the most collected data. Free Folk and Night's Watch came out about a year after Starks, so with Starks, Lannisters, and Neutrals, we've had about 18 months to almost 2 years at this point to collect and just see how those have shaped up. Now, frankly, with Night's Watch and Free Folk, they came out roughly about 8 months after the game's release, so not that much time in the grand scheme of things has actually passed, but, it was still just, we didn't want to release just big major wave of changes across four factions, technically five factions, all in one go. We wanted to see how things shaped up a bit. Plus, we were actually still dissecting some data from the releases of Night's Watch Heroes 1 and Free Folk Heroes 1. Frankly, as far as the development timetable went, we probably could have released a full update of Night's Watch and Free Folk at the time, but again, we wanted to dissect some more data, see how things shaped up, and really didn't want to overwhelm everyone with a bunch of changes here. We did do some minor tweaks to some initial units with the Night's Watch and the Free Folk, the Spearwives, the Sworn Brothers. Oh, that Sworn Brothers change. God, I love the internet. But today I was going to not so much focus on, going over changes, because you guys will see those in the coming months and everything there, but more so talk about just some kind of philosophical changes and kind of the things that were targeted when we were looking at each of these factions. And this is going to kind of play in with the original modifications we did to Starks, Lannisters, and Neutrals as well. So overall, the entire design and intent behind making these changes is to elevate units that people are not really taking or that are underperforming to a level of everything else. In rare cases, if something is overperforming, then yes, we will look at that. But luckily, as I've stressed before, we really haven't had too much of that. It's mainly been a case of some units are just, not as attractive options as others. And again, we want everything to be viable. So, you take something and it's cool. It's going to function. You don't want you to actually ever buy something and go like, man, I really regret buying these guys because they're just going to sit on the shelf from here to eternity. And, this is kind of can create a snowball effect because, we are working so far in advance, seeing potential new releases, combos with attachments, NCUs, future units and everything, that we have to keep that in perspective as well. So, like I'll use the Baratheons for example. They literally just came out with just a starter box, so they've got all three units, two NCUs, and two commanders. Well, we see the hero boxes that are available to them, the future units that are coming out, and things that are combo that will combo together. And we have a much broader perspective of the overall faction outside of what's literally like less than a tenth of the overall. This is again like the equivalent of if you're looking at like the Stark faction is just Outriders, Berserkers, and Sworn Swords, and going, yeah, this is what these guys have available. Reminds me back of the Halcyon days of the starter box release and that being it. But that's not what we're here to talk about. The point is that, we're very cautious with changes when we do these because ideally, when we do these faction evaluations, we want to do one wave of these and that's it. We don't want to do these things where it's like, oh, every 6 months we're going to go back and reevaluate this faction again and, see what we're going to change then. No. The idea behind these is that we do one round of changes and that's our fix. Basically, I'm not going to say get it right the second time, but tweak it once so it's in the position it needs to be. That's really where, we want things to be. So, this first off, if anyone has any impressions that like, oh, every 3 months, they're going to be reevaluating changes. No, we never said that. That's never been the intent, nor will that ever be the intent. Frankly, in a perfect world, it's every faction gets one, sweep of changes here, And that's pretty much it. And as I've talked about this previously, but this is actually does bear repeating, you'll notice that a lot of the units that actually were modified with Starks, Lannisters, and Neutrals were the baseline units that were initially released with the game. And that is plays back into the whole, we have our idea for what is going to develop as the meta, how things are going to shape up, and how data shows things are going to actually, play out. And then the actual, meta takes form and, play groups start happening, tournament data starts coming in, and we see like, oh, this is how things are actually shaping up. Like, for example, in initial playtest, like way back before the game was even released, various forms of like Cersei, and even upon release, Cersei was always like that unit that I'm like, man, I have a lot of concern about her power level. Coming from a personal standpoint, and then she's released, and like, yeah, she's strong. She's a very, nice tool for the Lannister arsenal. But as far as like, oh my God, broken or anything like that, no, never happened. I mean, perception-wise, sure, I'm sure there's people out there that are like, oh my God, most OP unit in the game. But that's depends on the, each week which unit is going to be the most powerful slash weakest. It waxes and wanes just like the coming of the tides and all that, and some other poetic analogy. But anyway, so that's kind of the general design philosophy when it comes to making these changes and whatnot. Basically get enough data, we do our evaluations, and that's it. You'll actually notice that the later units tend not to really get touched, and that's because things kind of hit their stride, like, okay, as these things are developed, we have a much clearer image of, especially now, what the game actually is versus when it was released and what we hoped it was going to be. So, that always ties into the design, mindset and the development process as well, because again, these things are done pretty far in advance, but now we're working with the image of like, okay, we understand this machine, we understand how to work around it. So that's good. But anyway, let's get on to talking about the actual Night's Watch and the Free Folk. So they will be getting their round of updates in the coming months, to round things out there and everything. And I'm actually going to start with the Free Folk because they kind of tie in more of what I was getting at here. So as far as the Free Folk are concerned, there is actually like not a lot of changes or modifications that's really going to be taking place of them. Some minor tweaks to a couple like units and NCUs and attachments. I mean, yeah, the same thing that you've seen in Stark's Lannisters and Night's Watch and everything. Things getting tweaked to bring them up to a level where like you feel good taking them. But as far as like, anything really I would consider massive or like reworking, not really anything in that ballpark. By the time the Free Folk were kind of getting finalized, as a faction and as a playstyle, we were pretty happy with where they were, and we understood like, basically how the game worked. Free Folk had a rough start because of the limited options they had, upon release. That probably hurt them more than, some other factions would, because they have a lot of crazy stuff, and I'm not even talking about things that are released yet, but things that are even still coming. They have a lot of really cool, crazy stuff. And they play much differently than a lot of other armies. I mean, pretty much any other army, because of their playstyle. And that was something that we had to, be aware of. Seeing the initial reaction to some units that came out and just seeing, like, and just going like, man, if only they saw X, if only they saw Y, that we know are coming very soon. And in that case, it was like, cave dwellers and thins and the hero box especially. So, things like that, knowing that these things exist, knowing that, these things are coming out, and then, seeing people just like, and not knowing about those things. And just going, oh, well, this army's nothing but raiders and this is all they do. Things like that. I don't want to ramble too much there because I'm trying to like not accidentally say anything specific, but I also don't want to be like cryptically vague. But really, there are some units that we're looking at, giving some evaluation to, just to kind of, we needed to see how they played out in like 1.5. with some of the greater rules changes. Specifically changes to like panic, to objective contesting in scenarios, and really see how those impacted things before we went and actually made any changes to the faction, because I really think that those two changes specifically were ones that heavily impacted the free folk versus a lot of other factors that go into the army. And we knew that, that's our testing data, backs that up and shows that and all that. So that's why, we didn't want to release the, these changes here without really seeing how the meta reacted to those changes as well. And that kind of ties into some things with the Night's Watch as well, because they're kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum to where free folk are going to, spam you of units and everything and just have a bunch of cheap bodies on the table. Night's Watch is the exact opposite. They've got a bunch of, sorry, a small amount of high elite units and function kind of the opposite way. So again, we needed to see how those changes really impacted those, because while we have, our internal playtest data and, all the simulations and all that stuff you want to run if you want to get like technical and way more hackers slash war game than it really is, you need to see how the actual, player base tournament reports and all things like that play out. So with Free Folk, what can you expect when it comes to like changes that are going to happen to them? Again, I would consider that much closer to like the level of Lannister changes, if I wanted to make a comparison, where you saw a bunch of like units kind of getting low key, slight modifications, slight tweaks here and there, but overall, there's not a huge amount of stuff being like redone or reworked. Like so forth the Lannisters. You had the Warrior Sons, who I will say went through like a significant change in their abilities and how they functioned. There's really nothing to like that level that I would see in the Free Folk changes. What we really have there is more so a lot of just kind of quality of life improvements, quality of life changes, where nothing really is getting modified, but just things are getting tightened. Attack dice are getting shifted, one or two abilities might get moved around or added. Just basically making things the same function that we had with the initial Starks, Lannisters, Neutrals, taking a unit and making what makes it cool or what its role is, and just pushing it further in that role. I talked about this with the Halberdiers, and they might be a good example. They had this role that they were supposed to be an intermediary, aggressive but still defensive unit. The problem is that being that intermediate role, they didn't really do any of those really well. But so the minor tweaks that we gave them, upping their attack dice slightly, giving them a slightly better morale, that kind of push just really set them into the level that we wanted them to be at for their point range, and really gave them a defined role when it came to like, okay, what do these guys do? And their role just happens to be a mini jack of all trades. With a lot of the free folk changes, that's kind of the same level you're looking at. Nothing is really getting, revamped, nothing is getting retooled. Just profiles are being moved around in a way that makes the unit do its job better. I would actually say probably one of the more significant yet low-key changes was the Spearwives moving from 5 points to 4 points. That might not seem like a lot, and that might not seem like a significant thing, but that allows you to take a unit that is, in its kind of design, a jack of all trades. This unit has a okay ranged attack. Well, let's be honest, not great ranged attack, not great melee attack, and just generally is okay. But that shift from 5 points to 4 points frees up 1 point in the Free Folk army, which is a big deal because it now allows them to customize that unit that's, again, doesn't excel at a lot but is not bad at anything. And just by saving that 1 point, you and having that unit be that jack of all trades unit in that point range, it now opens you up to all these attachment options. Now you can customize this unit to really do what you want to be. If you want to be better focused on melee, you've got attachments that can do that. If you want to be a bunker that just throws out condition tokens and weakened, you've got your Chosen of Styre that you can throw in there. You want it to be this kind of mobile hit and run unit, you can throw in a Spearwife Matriarch in there. You want to be just a holster for a skin changing bear, there, you can stick that in there. And it performs that role better than, well, not better, but differently than like trappers or another similar costed unit. And just by doing that one shift, it opens up that entire area. Versus having it at 5 points, where now it's competing with other more aggressive options that have a clear defined role, such as like Cave Dweller Savages, or, sorry, I almost talked about some other 5 point units that don't exist officially. Things like that. Just that little shift. And that's kind of a lot of the things you'll see in the free folk is, again, quality of life changes, but nothing really overly significant here. I mean, again, I'm just going over the units that units, attachments, NCUs that are messed with in my head and the changes that happen to them. And honestly, like I said, the shift from spear-wise being 5 points to 4 points is probably the most impactful from an individual unit standpoint that I can think of. Like, that's the one that modified the role and the position of this unit within the army greater than almost any other change. Any other changes that we made to them, you might even probably be able to see coming. Like, if a unit is not as aggressive as it should be, and this is should clearly be an aggressive unit, it's probably getting an attack boost. If this is a defensive unit that's supposed to be, really defensive and it's not living up to that, it might get a defense boost. If this is supposed to be a mobile unit, it's not as fast as it should be, it might be getting some kind of like movement trick. I'm not using any of those as like hidden examples there or whatnot. So, just because I mentioned defensive unit and for example, the, free folk have one right now, which is the Thins, don't read that as me going, oh my God, Thins are getting changed because, that's probably not going to happen. Just living up expectations. Now, let's flip the other side of the coin there and look at Night's Watch. Night's Watch, we did explain, some of the minor kind of philosophies in the 1.5 update when we increased the cost of the Sworn Brothers from 6 to 7, that the Night's Watch are a elite army. They're supposed to, be the best of the best of the best because they have to be, not because, they want to be, but because they've got a low number of guys. They have, they scrape by whatever they can, and as a result, the survivors just have to be that tough. That is just life at the wall. It's like that whole stereotypical like Russian philosophy. These guys are living on the edge of the world here in just the harshest environment, so only the, most burly and, most badass survive because everyone else gets killed by winter. I mean, that's the idea behind the Night's Watch. So, we're we're definitely, people have mixed feelings about the increase on the Sworn Brothers, but for the time, we really, it really was for the meta that, that change was made, to the, to at the time it was made. But of course, if you look at that and like being the only change, then that and the Bowen Marsh increase, then, you're like, oh man, that sucks. Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not even gonna say anything. That was a nerf to those units. Okay, yeah. They were retooled to get an additional attack die at their highest rank, but their cost did go up. And Bowen just straight up increased. I mean, let's call that what it is. It's not like Bowen was retooled or anything. He just got straight more expensive. But there's reasoning behind all of that, because that's he should have been at 4 points. Anyway, so when it comes to Night's Watch in, when they get, well, sorry, with their updates and whatnot, the, philosophy behind that is really just pushing more into the whole, giving them cool elite units and, letting them function like that. And so, as opposed to like free folk who receive just some minor tweaks and modifications to their stats and whatnot, really the majority of things that received attention with the Night's Watch was a lot of their attachments. Now, there's a couple of units in NCUs that also got, looked at as well, but the majority of things that got looked at for them was their attachments. And that is mainly pushing into the philosophy that you have these hyper really cool elite units that serve your specific roles. You've got your hammer units, you've got your anvil units, you've got your mobility units. These guys are all specialized in what they do, but they are very specialized in that role. So your customization for these guys comes through with your attachments. Your attachments will maintain fairly cheap, but give you some really cool, really powerful effects to really, complement these hyper elite units that you have. So, let's take a look at your Sworn Brothers. These guys are your aggressive option. They're ones to go out and deal damage. You have your Veterans of the Watch. These guys are your anvil. These guys are your tank unit that is meant to just hold a point and, not be taken off that. You have your Ranger Hunters. These are your mobile guys who are supposed to be shifting across the battlefield and, being just that ever elusive threat to the enemy. And then you have your Trackers, who are your mobile support unit, who is basically fulfilling the role that you need and, being your kind of cheap option, but also throwing out, vulnerable around and being able to shoot, potentially get melee, not that I would recommend that, but basically being your kind of stopgap unit. Everything has a very specific role, and just talking about those four core units, not going into the war machines or anything. But so the idea is that you have those, and then you further that with a really cool attachment option that brings a really unique power and a really unique role to that unit. Because again, the philosophy is you're not going to be playing as many units as anyone else because you are an elite army, okay? You can run neutrals that are cheaper, but then you're missing out on your Val mechanics. You can run conscripts, as your super cheap unit if you want additional activations. But frankly, if you're trying to spam activations in Night's Watch, that's not really what that faction's about. And you're gonna have a tough time doing that, and you should. The idea is that you have these, not necessarily an army of Death Stars, but definitely an army of Star Destroyers. If you want that analogy. So as a result, because you are paying, for elite options, and that's what you have access to, the attachments actually, I'm not gonna say are better than their points are, but they're definitely on the top end of the curve as far as their points go. And that's not necessarily to offset, the cost of the units, because that would be way counterproductive to, a design standpoint, but it's mainly to you have a really cool thing. It's not so much the points are what's limiting you, it's the fact that you have so few units, therefore your attachments are going to matter all that much. And frankly, the attachment that you pick for a Night's Watch unit, specifically talking about Night's Watch units here, that should really, really have an impact on what that unit is capable of, what its threats are, what its weaknesses are. If I, take a aggressive offensive attachment. Let's say Grin, for example. I mean, he's a very big favorite. If I put him in Sworn Brothers, I'm just adding extra offense to a unit that doesn't need it and stacking abilities and wasting points. So that's not really a great thing. But if I take Grin and I stick him into a unit of veterans, now I've got this big tanky unit that actually has some offensive potential. And, that is customizing that unit to what it does. If I take Grin and I put him into some Ranger Hunters, then that is theoretically. I'm not going to talk about units that are, getting modified or how they're getting modified, but that's going to change my Ranger Hunters from being this mobile kind of skirmishy unit into one that's really going to focus on just like charging and disrupting enemies and, causing that type of effect. And that shifts their role around. Let's talk about the Watch Captain. Okay, I mean that really shouldn't be a surprise to anyone that he is going to get modified and looked at. Okay, I'll give you that one if you want to look at spoilers or whatnot. The Watch Captain is your attachment that you will take if you want something to be really focused on the Val mechanic and really just double down on how cool those are and how effective they are. And I am trying to give a description without giving any specifics, but. So if I take that and I attach him to a Veterans of the Watch unit, then depending on the vows that I am using on that unit, I can really customize them to be a super, super tank and really take what they do and move it up to 11. I can make them, super mobile if I want. I can even add them some offense, although that's probably best saved elsewhere. But the point is that by taking the Watch Captain, that unit is being shaped from whatever its baseline role is, whether it's mobility, aggression, or defense. And I am layering on top of that, now they have a really big focus on vows and how those are going to interplay with the unit and how those are going to, impact the unit. So it's almost like this is going to be a nerdy analogy. You can almost view it as like your subclass in an RPG, okay? So you got your tank, you've got your healer, you've got your DPS, your damage dealer. Then you're going to, subclass onto something on top of that. And that could be any number of things that can either complement what they already do or give them some drastic new ability that's not even going to be something that you'd even expect them to have, in some form or another. Oh, this will be minor spoilers, I guess. This actually has nothing to do with the 1.5 changes. This is just talking about things that exist in the future. So, you might have an attachment for the Night's Watch that come out that is a really big focus on upping a unit's movement shenanigans and flank and rear potential and damage. So that's a unique option there as far as the attachment goes. So if I want to attach him to a Sworn Brothers unit, then all of a sudden I'm going to have this Sworn Brothers unit that's baseline built to deal damage, but now all of a sudden has a bunch of movement shenanigans. If I attach him to a Veterans unit, I'm going to have this unit that is meant to be tanky and hold points, but now suddenly has the option to just jet across the battlefield and, really lead to some surprise plays. I can attach him to a Hunter unit that is going to now excel even further at what they're already built to do. I can take him and attach them to a conscript unit and have a relative cheap unit that now actually has a dedicated role. That's kind of the philosophy that you're going to see of a lot of the Night's Watch attachments, is that you've got this unit that this is what they're good at. Do you want to make that, do you want to really like take what they do and crank it up to 11, or do you want to give them something completely out of left field? And that is different than a lot of the way the attachments function in other armies, where they might have just a cool ability that kind of feels into like an army theme. With a lot of the Night's Watch attachments and kind of the direction that things are being pushed, and I think I said 1.5 earlier, which is not correct. The next update for them and everything, you're really going to be able to customize this toolbox of like, okay, this is my baseline unit. This is what it does. What else do I want it to do, or do I want it to do this thing even better? And that's just talking about generic stuff. We're not even getting to talking about, specific characters or things like that, which, by the way, most of them, you can already see how these functions. Like Alistar Thorne, for example, you can see that his design intent, that guy is going to make it so your guys don't run away, and he's going to really punish, the opponent for being weaker than them in some regard. Donald Noy, 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 whatever. He is going to just make your guys a super big tank. Those are two good, I would say, Core and Half Hand. He punishes the opponent for even daring to attack this unit. Gives them all kinds of just nasty effects in that regard. You already see this. This is not a new, like, oh my god, we're reworking the faction. This is just the design intent of the faction being moved in a way to make it easier to actually accomplish. So you're going to see a lot more of that in like the generic ones. Like I will f okay, let's talk another little minor spoiler here. Jorah Mormont is probably one of my favorite characters in the setting just because I really like the old like grizzled veteran kind of aesthetic, like Jorah Mormont and Barristan Selmy, to a lesser extent the Hound. These are the kind of like characters I really like, just like that Clint Eastwood Gran Torino style, just old grizzled bastard style. Jorah Mormont, he's one of the ones we're looking at. I gotta say that the changes that we are working on with him, man, he is probably one of my favorite commanders to play because I already love his cards. And just what his role is now about how he affects his unit. Oh, man. So man, it's the temptation just to spoil this out and everything is really there, but I'm not going to do that. But essentially, Jor makes his unit the best of the best of the best. You want to see, like, this is the exemplary Night's Watch legends of old, the old tales of, the heroes of the realm, the shields of the realm of men, the sword in the darkness. Jor embodies what the Night's Watch is supposed to be. And his unit that you stick him in, they are going to embody like exactly what the Night's Watch is supposed to be. I'm not going to say he turns them into a Death Star unit, but he makes them one of the focuses of the battlefield. The closest comparison I can kind of think to is like a the Kingsguard. Now, Joffrey, the Kingsguard are some of the best, swordsmen, best quotations, in the Seven Kingdoms and everything, but it's really the grandeur and the ideal of the Kingsguard, like what they're supposed to represent. That similar feeling is what Jor conveys onto his unit. When you're in Jor as your commander, the unit that he is in, it's like, this is what the Night's Watch, this is what the potential of the Night's Watch should be. And of course, that's going to change based on what unit you stick him in. He really is an ex a master at taking whatever that unit is good at and just, when I said earlier about cranking things to 11, he cranks it, this one goes to 12, baby. you stick him in a unit of Sworn Brothers, and they just get super scary about offense. You stick him in a unit of veterans, and that's gonna really feel like you have veterans of the wall, of the Night's Watch. You stick him in Ranger Hunters, and well, okay, to be honest, that's probably the of those three options I keep mentioning, that's probably the last place I would stick him. You, for whatever reason, stick him in a unit of conscripts, and man, they're gonna seem like they're actual capable fighters. Probably not the place I would stick him either, but you've got that option there at least. So, that's something that excites me there. So that's really, again, the overall kind of design aesthetic that you should expect to see in the changes coming up to, Night's Watch and Free Folk. To re-summarize these things at the end, again, Free Folk are receiving more unit tweaks than anything else, just some kind of numbers changes. Night's Watch, a lot of the changes are focused, on their attachments. I will say that they did receive unit changes and some NCU changes, but by and by, nothing super drastic on that regard. It's mainly their attachments got a lot of the focus there, into how they function. So that's actually fairly exciting. It really does give them, even from a philosophical and list building perspective, makes them feel better and different than, most other armies, and it's a really enjoyable thing. Like, I really do enjoy Night's Watch list creation. So that's going to wrap things up about that talk today. We're ushering in a new year. It is 2020. We have a lot of exciting things coming out this year. We have our 1.5 update that came out, which, I've been very pleased with. We have our updates to Starks, Lannisters, and Neutrals, which I am thrilled about. We have our upcoming changes to Night's Watch and, Free Folk. We have two new factions on the horizon here. We have the Baratheons, who are going to see their time in the sun. We've started spoiling some things from their hero boxes. We have the Targaryens releasing this month. All these things are super exciting, and that's just talking about factions. We're not even talking about the overall, like, grander plans for the game and everything, such as, we announced our organized play system, and just thinking about all the conventions and everything that are coming up this year. It's going to be an exciting year, and I'm really looking forward to it. So I figured that I would also end this on a positive note on a personal level. So, I have finally managed to break free of my sponsorship duties. Previously with General Mills and pushing their damn cereals, and then previous before that to Totino's and all that crap. So, I am in a mood to celebrate, but I do have a bit of an issue in that we had a bit of an incident a few days ago that I want to share with you guys. This might be a little humorous story. You might get this. This is completely unrelated. So, by the way, if you only care about Song of Ice and Fire, feel free to have shut this off 30 seconds ago. But I just really wanted to share this because I thought it was, it was just one of those weird things that happened when the New Year's came out. So, I didn't even know this was still a thing, but we had a Pokemon Go incident a few days ago. This mother and her son came up to the gate asking if they could catch the Pikachu that likes to hang around here. I didn't see a problem with it, so I let them in. Well, the kid was running around, like, super excited, running and bouncing everywhere. Well, he wasn't looking where he was going, and he just slams his head right into the wall. The mother just ran over hysterical, screaming at us for not looking after her son like we're supposed to be babysitters or something. She then started screaming about suing us, and I had to explain to her that, she won't have much luck suing us because of this. So she said that's fine, but someone is going to pay for his medical bills. And so, just humoring her, I asked how much she thought it would be, and she goes, "Oh, it's going to be about Tree Fitty." Well, it was about this time I noticed that the child was just a basketball of googly eyes, and the mom was a 12-foot-tall monster from the Mesozoic era. And I said, "God damn it, Loch Ness monster, get out of my damn base! I ain't giving you no damn Tree Fitty, and take your damn basketball son with you." That's like the third time this week they came by. Anyway, guys, Happy New Year.